A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel wrote in with something that's been nagging at him, and I think it's going to land with a lot of people. He's been hearing from friends who are actually listening to the show. George Luft up in Connecticut, a YouTube subscriber, sent his best wishes. And Mike in Jerusalem, who apparently had reservations about the AI voices but stuck with it anyway, told Daniel he finally understood how Archaea runs wet leases because of the episode we did on the ACMI model. So the content is doing its job. People are learning things. And that's exactly what makes Daniel uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable? Because it's working?
Uncomfortable, because now he has to think about whether to tell more people it exists. He describes the podcast as a passion project, run at marginal cost, produced mostly for his own curiosity and education. But he knows there are people in Israel, friends of his, who would get something out of these episodes, and he feels it's a pity to let the work languish in relative obscurity. The thing that would actually help, he says, is Spotify reviews to keep the average healthy, passing the word along, and sending in prompts about topics the show hasn't covered. He's not asking us to read a list of growth hacks. His real question is deeper. He grew up in Ireland, and he's pretty sure his hesitation about self-promotion comes from internalizing a cultural value that says being self-promotional is gauche and obnoxious. He has watched that hesitation put him at a professional disadvantage more than once.
And he's already done the intellectual work, hasn't he? He says the fullest extension of his anti-marketing logic is self-defeating. If everyone were incredibly modest about their projects, there'd be no mechanism for discovery. Marketing isn't spam and noise. It's the system that connects people with things they'd like. Profit or growth, in that frame, is a happy coincidence and a system that lifts all the boats. He's got the philosophy sorted.
He does. The problem, he says, is going from internalizing that idea to actually having the confidence to execute it. He doesn't want to be that friend who's always pushing their latest project, asking people to subscribe. So the question is, what are some good tips for someone pushing forward a project who wants to sincerely ask friends, relatives, or anyone interested to help spread the word? And underneath that, how do you fight the imposter syndrome that comes with promoting your own passion project?
That's the thing. This isn't a marketing strategy question. He's not asking how to run a campaign. He's asking how to reconcile who he's with the act of asking. It's an identity problem wearing a marketing costume.
So let's unpack what's actually going on here, because I don't think this is really about marketing strategy. The strategy is simple. Reviews, word of mouth, prompts. He's already named the three levers. What he's wrestling with is whether he's allowed to pull them.
And that's a much more interesting question, because the hesitation isn't rational. He's already demonstrated that to himself. He's written out the logical case for why promotion is necessary, and he still can't bring himself to ask. That gap between knowing and doing is where the whole problem lives.
The gap is cultural. He named it himself. The Irish modesty script. And that's not just a personal quirk. It's a recognizable social pattern. There's a word for it in Ireland. Begrudgery. The tendency to resent or distrust someone who's doing well, who's getting above themselves. It's the tall poppy syndrome. The social penalty for standing out.
Tall poppy syndrome is interesting because it's not unique to Ireland. Australia has it, New Zealand has it, parts of Scandinavia have it. The Jante law in Denmark and Norway is basically a formalized version. Don't think you're special. Don't think you're better than us. Don't think you can teach us anything. It's a cultural script that equates self-promotion with moral failure. And if you grow up inside that script, it doesn't feel like a choice. It feels like being a decent person.
Right. The person who talks about their own work isn't just annoying. They're violating a social contract. They're claiming more than their share of attention. And the punishment for that violation is social rejection. So the hesitation Daniel feels isn't shyness. It's a learned prediction that self-promotion leads to being disliked.
And here's the part that makes it sticky. That prediction was probably accurate in the context where he learned it. In a small Irish community where everyone knows everyone and social hierarchy is stable, standing out really did carry a cost. The script was doing its job. It kept the peace. The problem is that he's now operating in a completely different context. A global podcast audience, a professional network in Israel, a creative economy where obscurity is the default failure mode. And the old script is still running.
The script doesn't update itself. It just keeps firing. Every time he thinks about asking someone to listen or leave a review, the old alarm goes off. This is gauche. This is obnoxious. People will think less of you. And the alarm feels like wisdom. It feels like moral discernment, but it's actually just a cultural artifact that's outlived its usefulness.
There's a psychological layer underneath the cultural one, too, because imposter syndrome in this context isn't really about competence. Daniel knows the podcast is good. He's got friends telling him it's good. Mike in Jerusalem learned something useful about aviation leasing from an episode. That's evidence of competence. What he's doubting is legitimacy. The belief that his project is important enough to warrant other people's attention.
And that's a fascinating distinction. Competence is about whether you can do the thing. Legitimacy is about whether the thing deserves to exist in public. Daniel can hold both beliefs at once. The podcast is good, and it'd be presumptuous to promote it, because promoting it means claiming it deserves attention, and he's not sure he's allowed to make that claim.
And here's the trap. He's projecting that judgment onto other people. He assumes that if he asks, other people will think he's being pushy or self-important. But that's not a fact about other people. That's a prediction he's making, and it's probably wrong. There's a whole body of work on this, the liking gap. People consistently underestimate how positively others respond to them after a social interaction. The spotlight effect. People dramatically overestimate how much others notice and judge them. Everyone's too busy thinking about themselves to scrutinize you the way you scrutinize yourself.
So the fear that everyone will notice you promoting your podcast and think less of you is built on a miscalculation. Most people won't notice. And the ones who do notice will mostly think, oh, good for him, and move on with their day. The social cost of a sincere ask is tiny. But the predicted cost, in the mind of someone carrying the Irish modesty script, is enormous.
And that asymmetry cuts the other way, too. The cost of not asking is invisible, so it's easy to ignore. But it's real. Here's a concrete number. 45% of podcast listeners discover new shows through word of mouth. It's the single biggest discovery channel. Bigger than search, bigger than social media, bigger than algorithmic recommendations. So if Daniel's reluctance to ask is throttling word of mouth, he's not just being modest. He's actively cutting off the main growth channel for the project he cares about.
45%. That's the number that should reframe this whole conversation. Because it means the question isn't whether self-promotion is gauche. The question is whether the word deserves to be found. And if it does, then word of mouth is the mechanism. And word of mouth doesn't happen by accident. It happens because someone asked or because someone was asked and said yes.
And that's where the distinction between spam and a sincere ask comes in. Daniel's fear is being the friend who's always pushing their latest project. But that fear conflates two completely different behaviors. Spam is frequent, generic, and indifferent to the relationship. A sincere ask is specific, respectful, and grounded in the relationship. They're not on the same spectrum. They're different species.
The friend who's always pushing their latest project is sending the same message to everyone. Hey, check out my thing. Hey, did you see my thing? Hey, my thing again. The message doesn't change based on who's receiving it. That's what makes it feel like spam. The sincere ask is tailored. It says, I know you. I know what you care about. And I think this specific thing might be useful or interesting to you.
And that's the key insight. The sincerity isn't in the tone of voice. It's in the specificity. A vague request, please share this, is actually a burden. It puts the cognitive work on the recipient. They have to figure out what to share, where to share it, what to say. A specific request, would you listen to this episode and tell me if the explanation is clear, is a gift. It's a small, bounded task that the person can actually do, and doing it feels good.
So the first practical tip is to make the ask specific, not please share my podcast, but would you leave a 2-sentence review on Spotify? It helps the algorithm. Or, I did an episode about ACMI leases. You might find it interesting, given your work in aviation. The specificity does two things. It respects the recipient's time and intelligence, and it gives them a clear way to say yes.
And that's the thing about asking for help that most people get backwards. They think of it as imposing on someone, taking something from them, time, attention, goodwill, but the research and the lived experience both point the other way. Asking for help is offering someone the opportunity to be generous. People like being asked. They like being useful. Declining to ask is a form of paternalism. It assumes they can't say no, that they're too polite to refuse, so you have to protect them from the burden of your request.
That's a hard reframe for someone with the modesty script. Because the script says asking is taking, but the reality is that asking is offering, and when you don't ask, you're not being humble. You're denying your friends the chance to be generous. You're deciding on their behalf that they wouldn't want to help, and that's not modesty. That's a kind of arrogance.
It's the same logic as the anti-marketing position Daniel already dismantled. If everyone is too modest to promote, there's no discovery mechanism. If everyone is too modest to ask, there's no generosity mechanism. The fullest extension of anti-asking logic is that nobody ever helps anyone, because everyone's too polite to request help. It's self-defeating in exactly the same way.
The logical case is solid. Promotion is necessary, asking is a gift, the social cost is tiny, the real cost of silence is invisible but large. Daniel's already done this thinking. His problem is operational. How do you get from accepting the logic to actually sending the message?
This is where the standard advice fails. Fake it till you make it doesn't work here. Because the problem isn't a lack of confidence that you can act confident. The problem is a prediction that acting will lead to punishment. Fake it till you make it just layers performance on top of a faulty prediction. It makes the whole thing feel even more fraudulent.
The actual bridge is evidence. Small, low stakes asks that produce positive outcomes. You don't start by asking 100 people to leave reviews. You start by asking one friend to listen to one episode and tell you what they think. Someone you trust. Someone who's already shown interest. And then you pay attention to what actually happens.
What actually happens, in the overwhelming majority of cases, is that the person says yes, or says they're busy but sounds interested, or says they'll get to it later and means it. The predicted catastrophe, rejection, mockery, social death doesn't arrive. And each time it doesn't arrive, the prediction gets a little weaker. That's the rewiring, not affirmations. Just evidence that the world doesn't punish you for asking.
The spotlight effect is worth returning to here. Because the imposter feeling, the sense that your project isn't good enough to promote, is a prediction about the future that you can't validate without testing it. You're forecasting that people will judge you, that they'll find the work lacking, that you'll be exposed as someone who overestimated their own value, but you can't know any of that until you actually put the work in front of people. The forecast is just a feeling dressed up as a fact.
The evidence he already has contradicts the forecast. George Luft in Connecticut is enjoying the episodes. Mike in Jerusalem learned something real. These are data points. The imposter syndrome says the project isn't important enough to warrant attention. The data says people are already paying attention and getting value. The imposter syndrome just refuses to update.
There's something else in Daniel's framing that's worth pulling out. He describes profit or growth as a happy coincidence, and a system that lifts all the boats. That's not just a rationalization. That's a different model of what promotion is for. The old model, the one the modesty script assumes, is that promotion is self-aggrandizement. It's about making yourself look good, but the system model is different. Promotion is participation in a discovery ecosystem. You're not saying, look at me. You're saying, here's something that might be useful, and I'm putting it where people who need it can find it.
That reframe matters because it changes what you're asking for. You're not asking for validation. You're not asking people to stroke your ego. You're asking them to participate in a system that connects useful things with the people who need them. A Spotify review isn't a compliment. It's a signal that helps the algorithm surface the show to people searching for these topics. Sending in a prompt isn't flattery. It's contributing to the pool of questions the show exists to answer. The ask is functional, not personal.
When Daniel asks someone to leave a review, he's not saying, please tell me I'm good. He's saying, this show helps people understand things like wet leases and AI agents, and a review helps more people find it. That's not self-promotion. That's system maintenance.
The people who are already listening, George and Mike, they're already doing the promotion. They're not waiting to be asked. They're telling Daniel they're enjoying the show, they're sharing what they learned. That's what people do when they like something. The question isn't how to make them promote. The question is how to not get in the way of the promotion that's already happening.
That's a good place to pause and think about what actually helps. Because the practical mechanics are simple. Specific asks, small stakes, build evidence, treat promotion as system maintenance. But the deeper shift is recognizing that the hesitation isn't protecting anyone. It's not protecting Daniel from embarrassment. It's not protecting his friends from burden. It's just keeping useful work invisible. And the people who are already engaged are the proof that the work deserves to be visible.
I want to be careful here because this can tip into motivational speaker territory really fast. The goal isn't to turn Daniel into someone who loves self-promotion. That's not going to happen, and it shouldn't. The goal is to get him to the point where he can make one specific ask without feeling like he's violating his own values. That's the whole ballgame. One ask to one person for one specific thing, and then see what happens.
The evidence says what happens will be better than the forecast. The liking gap says people respond more warmly than you predict. The spotlight effect says they judge you less than you fear. And the 45% number says word of mouth is the channel that matters most. All three point the same direction. The hesitation is costing more than it saves.
Here's the thing about the Irish modesty script that's worth naming. It's not wrong. Self-promotion can be gauche and obnoxious. The script exists because there really are people who talk about themselves too much, who treat every conversation as a marketing opportunity, who don't read the room. The script isn't a lie, it's just over-applied. It treats all self-promotion as the same, when the reality is that a specific, sincere ask to a friend is a completely different act from broadcasting your greatness to strangers.
The distinction is the relationship. The modesty script works fine in a context where everyone already knows you, where your work speaks for itself, where reputation is established through long acquaintance. It breaks down in a context where discovery is algorithmic, where attention is scarce, where the people who would benefit from your work don't know it exists. In that context, modesty isn't a virtue. It's a tax on your own usefulness.
That's the frame I'd offer. Not be more confident. Not get over your imposter syndrome. But your work has value, and modesty is preventing that value from reaching the people who need it. The question isn't whether you deserve attention. The question is whether the work deserves to be found. And if it does, then the only way to respect the work is to make sure people can find it.
Where does that leave Daniel? He's got the intellectual framework. He's got the reframe. He's got the practical mechanics. The remaining gap is just the doing. And the doing gets easier every time the prediction fails to come true. The first ask is the hardest. The 10th is easier. The 100th is just part of running the project.
The asks he's already identified are small. A Spotify review. A prompt about a new topic. Passing the word to someone who might be interested. These aren't big asks. They're not asking someone to invest money or make a career change. They're asking for 2 minutes of attention in a direction the person might already be inclined to go.
The Mike in Jerusalem story is instructive here. Mike had reservations about the AI voices. He could have bounced off the show entirely. But he stayed, and he learned something about how Archaea operates wet leases. That's a person who came in skeptical and left with useful knowledge. How many more Mikes are out there? People who would get something from the show but don't know it exists. The only way to reach them is through the word of mouth that Daniel's hesitation is currently suppressing.
The people who are already listening are the bridge to those people. George in Connecticut, Mike in Jerusalem, they're not just passive consumers. They're nodes in the discovery network. If they tell one person each, and those people tell one person each, that's how the 45% works. But the network only activates if someone asks. Or if the people who are already enthusiastic feel like they have permission to share.
Permission is an interesting word there. Because part of what Daniel might be doing, without realizing it, is signaling that he doesn't want the promotion to happen. The modesty script doesn't just keep him from asking. It might be keeping his friends from sharing. If he's always downplaying the show, oh, it's just a little thing, it's nothing, don't worry about it, then his friends pick up on that and don't share either. The modesty becomes contagious.
That's a subtle point. The ask isn't just about getting other people to act. It's about giving them permission to act on your behalf. When Daniel says, "Actually, this show is good and I'd love it if more people found it," that's not just a request. That's a signal that he's okay with the show being shared, that he won't be embarrassed if someone promotes it, that the modesty script is no longer running the show.
That permission might be the most important thing he can give. Just a clear signal to the people who already care that it's okay to tell other people, because the friends who are already listening want to help. They've already shown that by reaching out. They just might not know if their help is wanted.
You keep saying 45%. I ran a record label in Dublin in the late 90s. Word of mouth was about 100%. Nobody found anything any other way. You stood outside Whelan's handing flyers to people who were already going in to see a different band, and you hoped they'd come back next week. I was terrible at it. Hated every second. The one record we put out that actually did anything, it wasn't because of me. It was because the bass player's sister worked at a radio station, and she just put the track in a rotation slot one night without asking anyone. She liked it. She thought it deserved to be heard, so she made sure it got heard. I never thanked her properly. The label folded 2 years later. And part of the reason it folded was that I was too embarrassed to ask anyone else for help. I'd rather stand in the rain with a stack of flyers than pick up a phone and say, "This is good, would you play it?" That's not modesty. That's just fear with a nice name.
The sister didn't wait to be asked. That's the detail that matters. She saw something she believed in, and she promoted it on her own. Because that's what people do when they like something. They don't need a formal request. They just need to know the thing exists, and that the person who made it won't be mortified if it gets shared.
The fact that you never thanked her properly, that's the cautionary tale. Not that the label folded, but that you didn't close the loop with the one person who actually helped. Because thanking her would have meant acknowledging that the promotion happened, that someone else had done what you couldn't bring yourself to do, and that would have meant confronting the whole thing directly.
I told myself I'd get around to it. Then the station changed its format, and she moved to Galway, and I never did. The record still sold a few hundred copies. People heard it because of her, not because of anything I did. And I couldn't even send a proper thank you. That's what the hesitation costs. Not just the opportunities you miss. The relationships you let go quiet because acknowledging the help means acknowledging you needed it.
The friends who are already listening, George and Mike, they're the bass player's sister. They're already doing the promotion. They're telling Daniel they're enjoying the show. They're sharing what they learned. The question isn't how to ask them to do more. The question is how to make sure they know their help is seen and appreciated.
How to not repeat the mistake of letting it go quiet. Because the thank you isn't just politeness. It's the signal that the promotion was welcome. That the person who shared didn't overstep. That the modesty script isn't going to punish them for being generous.
I had 4 people offer to help with the label over the years. Friends who said they knew someone at a venue, or they talked to a promoter, or they put the record in their shop. I turned down all 4. Politely. Said I didn't want to impose. What I meant was, I didn't want to owe anyone. And then I sat there wondering why nothing was growing. The math doesn't work. You can't reject every offer of help and then complain that nobody's helping.
That's the thing about the modesty script. It doesn't just stop you from asking. It stops you from accepting. Because accepting help means admitting you wanted the help in the first place. And wanting help feels like weakness. So you turn it down, and you call it independence, and the project dies quietly.
The reframe we've been building all episode is that accepting help isn't weakness, it's participation. When someone offers to share your work, they're not doing you a favor that you have to repay, they're joining the system. They're becoming part of the discovery mechanism. And the only way to respect, that's to say yes and thank you and let them.
I don't know if I'd have done it differently, probably not. I was young and I had the whole thing tangled up with my own ego. But the sister, she didn't have any of that. She just heard the track, thought it was good, and put it on the radio. Clean. No agonizing. No imposter syndrome. She wasn't promoting herself. She was promoting something she believed in. That's the difference. When it's not about you, it's not hard.
When it's not about you, it's not hard. That might be the whole episode in one line.
It connects back to the system framing Daniel already articulated. Growth as a happy coincidence and a system that lifts all the boats. When you're promoting the system, not yourself, the modesty script doesn't fire. Because the script is about self-aggrandizement. It's about not thinking you're better than other people. But promoting a system that helps people understand wet leases or AI agents, that's not claiming to be better than anyone. That's just doing the work of making useful things findable.
The practical answer for Daniel, and for anyone in the same position, is threefold. First, make the ask specific. Not please share this, but would you do this specific small thing? Second, start with the people who are already engaged. George, Mike, the friends who've already reached out. They're not cold prospects. They're warm nodes in the network. Third, treat the promotion as system maintenance, not self-promotion. You're not asking for validation. You're asking for help keeping the discovery mechanism running.
Underneath all three, the deeper move. Recognize that the hesitation is a prediction, not a fact. The prediction says asking leads to rejection. The evidence says asking leads to generosity. Every time you test the prediction and it fails, the hesitation gets weaker. Not because you've psyched yourself up, but because you've gathered data that contradicts the old script.
The misconception most people carry into this is that self-promotion is inherently obnoxious. That the only way to avoid being the pushy friend is to never ask for anything. But the reality is that the obnoxiousness isn't in the asking. It's in the vagueness, the frequency, and the indifference to the relationship. A specific, sincere, infrequent ask to someone who knows you isn't spam. It's an invitation. And declining to extend the invitation doesn't protect anyone. It just keeps good work invisible.
The people who would benefit from that work, the ones who don't know it, exists yet, they're the real cost. The people who are searching for answers and not finding them because the show that has the answers is sitting in relative obscurity. That's what the modesty script actually costs. The audience that never gets to find the work.
The open question for Daniel, and for anyone listening who's in the same spot, is this. What would it take to make one small, specific ask this week? Just one message to one person, asking for one specific thing, and then see what happens. The evidence says the response will be better than the prediction, and the only way to find out is to test it.
If you're listening and you want to be part of the system, the asks are the ones Daniel named. A Spotify review helps the algorithm surface the show. Sending in prompts about topics we haven't covered keeps the project alive. And if you know someone who gets something out of these episodes, passing the word along is the whole mechanism. That's not a favor to us. That's how discovery works.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the whole thing running. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com with your prompts and questions. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.